Welcome in.
Want to let you know, we have a wonderful topic for you tonight. It's going to be great. All of the tingles. All the personal attention.
Now the mouth sounds is where we're calling it.
Woo!
Okay, anyway, we are back in action. Hope you loved that intro.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Too Scared to Sleep, guys.
Hell yeah.
Oh, that was too much. Okay.
Boy, we're good at this shit, huh?
I have so much to talk about when it comes to ASMR, but at the same time, it is so psychologically revealing for me to tell this story.
Really damning stuff.
It really is. It really is. It's like self-character. It's character self-assassination for me to talk about my ASMR kink.
Oh, it's a kink now?
I found the perfect ASMR artist doing the perfect scenario, hitting all of the right triggers. It's insane. It's horrible. It's crazy.
What? Who is it?
Her name is Demonica ASMR.
Oh, well, I'm interested.
She's Eastern European.
Okay.
So she's got a Bond girl accent.
Ooh.
She is blonde.
Okay.
She's not too made up, so she's a little plain.
That is your type.
She wears glasses, but she has so much tattooing across her chest. That is also very cool.
Hold on. We are making a quick note of this.
I'll send you the link.
Yeah.
And she does this one... She does this one video where it's like she's pretending to give you she's pretending to be a doctor and she's giving you a physical exam, and it doesn't get weird or anything like that, but you know, and she's talking and she obviously has a crush on you, and so she's asking you all of these like, are you in a relationship, and you know, you have beautiful eyes. It's just, I told you already, it's psychologically damning for me to talk about.
Oh, she is heavily tattooed. I'm digging that. We're gonna take a quick screenshot.
That's the only video of ASMR that I'm ever going to need again. And it just like...
ASMR. So I know what you're talking about.
Me and it puts me in that vibe.
I'm in no place to judge you.
But it's just, you know, it's like all of those things. It really is like Zuckerberg came in and was like, okay, I know exactly what he wants. And I'm going to create. It's just like the movie Ex Machina.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently rewatched that. I got zooted out of my gourd and I watched Ex Machina, and that'll make you think about some shit.
That will make you think about some shit.
That is a spectacular movie.
That's all I'm going to talk about my ASMR kick.
Yeah, we can definitely move off of that topic, but I do want to get into what we were talking about just before we had started recording, when I decided we should discuss it while recording.
Mm-hmm.
So I recently watched a TikTok. And a question was posed. If you could have sex with anyone throughout history, who would it be? I want to hear your answer, Jake.
I'm going to go ahead and go safe with this and say Cleopatra. You know that she seduced Julius Caesar by rolling herself into a rug, and they brought her in and they just unrolled the rug, and there she was naked.
Okay.
And just like that, he's like, yes, I'll give you half of the Roman Empire.
Could be the move, though. Honestly, that's
a power move.
That's some shit right there. Fuck, is that what I need to be doing?
What's yours? Rasputin?
No. Oh, God, no. I would be curious to see how big his dick actually was, but that man is so smelly. It's something I would like to look at behind plexiglass, like a bunch of layers of air freshener, because that man is pungent.
Then what is yours, historically?
See, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a good answer for this, and the only thing that's coming to mind is like my current celebrity crushes. But I'm trying to think of like a good historical figure, and I know that in like 24 to 48 hours, I'm going to think of the perfect thing, and it's going to be too late to re-record.
You just have to post it on our Instagram. So it's either Kiernan Shipka or Anya Taylor-Joy?
They are definitely on the list. Recently, I have also been madly in love with Florence Pugh. She is just...
I could see that.
Chef kiss. Very, very good.
You watched Hawkeye, right?
No, I haven't watched it yet. But I was talking to my friend at work, Nate, about it. And he was like, really? I mean, you only need to watch like the last three episodes. And I was like, okay, what is the episode that Florence Pugh shows up? Because that and then one other character reveal are the only ones that I care about.
There's only like six episodes. Just watch the whole fucking thing. You just told me that you're rewatching Daredevil.
Yeah,
So obviously you have time on your hands. So didn't even start with me.
Yeah, but see, I can watch like 20 minutes of a Daredevil episode at a time. And
that's true.
Not break the immersion that I've created for myself.
So since we recorded, what is it? Matrix Resurrections came out, which was awesome.
Fuck yeah, it was.
And Spider-Man No Way Home came out.
Fuck yeah.
Which was another level of good.
Oh my god. I want to say, Matrix, I really enjoyed Matrix. I thought it was great, and I thought felt like it fit into the world really well. I can understand why it's kind of divisive, though. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of mixed reviews on that. But Spider-Man... Oh my god.
So well written. So well acted.
Fuck.
The pacing. It was perfect.
It's so good. There's just everything about it. And I saw a TikTok too recently that kind of helped me see the other Spider-Man movies in a different light. Because, mm-hmm. like, obviously, Homecoming, eh. No Way Home. Or not No Way Home. Far From Home. Was like, eh. Also, they were good, but they felt more like filler episodes than what I wanted a Spider-Man movie to be. But somebody on TikTok had said that now, especially with the announcement of a new Spider-Man trilogy, like going into the works for the MCU, what we were watching was the origin story for Spider-Man. Like every other one, it's been like a little hint of like, you know, the first Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire. You get to see like a little bit of his life, and then he gets bit by the spider, and then Uncle Ben dies, and that happens in like the first 20 minutes of the movie. Basically, what he was saying was they just, instead of combining it into 20 minutes, they spread it out over a trilogy. So you have like these impactful, you know, character moments and big character growth and things that happen that change him from being Iron Man Jr. and a kid to now graduated and being like his own hero. And now we're going to finally get to see the Spider-Man that we all want. And that really helped me view the past two movies in a lot better light. Because I was like, eh, those are kind of disappointing. But now I can kind of look back on them a little bit more fondly. Mm-hmm. And I'm just fucking, oh, I'm fucking jazzed, man.
Yeah, it was crazy. Matrix Resurrections came out. And I was going to go see it with my friend, a buddy from mine from the old car dealership, and my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And we got to the movie theater, and the movie theater had been closed all the way down, shut down because of a COVID outbreak amongst the staff members.
Oh, shit.
And then I was supposed to go see Spider-Man for the second time with my kids the next day, but the movie theater was still closed down.
Damn, son.
Yeah. COVID outbreak.
I got really lucky. I got to see Spider-Man, because I think it released Thursday night. So I got to see it Friday night. Excuse me. I got to see it Friday night with my friend Nate from work, because he had taken me to see Shang-Chi. Mm-hmm. So we got to go see that together. We fucking nerded out. But we got fairly decent seats, and I was surprised that for like last minute, they actually had tickets available for like day after opening night. But then the Matrix one, that one was kind of cool, because my two bosses at the tattoo shop that I work at, they're both huge Matrix fans. Like, they are big into it. So they're husband and wife, and the wife wanted to surprise the husband by buying everybody tickets. So nobody said anything to Anthony, the husband. And Sarah had bought all of us tickets.
That's cool.
Yeah. So they were like getting all ready to go. They had their kids with them. And then like, as they had pulled into the parking lot, Sarah was like, "Oh, by the way, everybody's here. Surprise." And he was pretty happy about that. But we went to that new Santico's that took over Alamo Draft House that I'm still salty about.
Yeah,
that's really sad. But that was the first time I got to be there, and it was expensive. That was my big takeaway from that theater. It was expensive. $7 for a drink.
Yeah, it's insane. Just smuggling your own drink in.
Yeah. But the movie was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I liked it. I watched Matrix. I think I've seen Matrix Resurrections like three times because it's on HBO Max.
Oh, shit, it is on HBO.
Yeah.
I want to rewatch it on HBO because the main girl in that, she talks so fast. It is really hard to understand her in a couple spots.
Jessica Henwick?
Yeah.
She's from Iron Fist.
Oh, wouldn't know. Didn't watch it.
Yeah.
I watched half of the first episode and went, wow, this sucks shit. Apparently, it didn't get better.
Me too. Me too. I felt the same way. I never watched Iron Fist. It just got too stupid.
The closest I got to that was watching Defenders, which he was kind of in.
Yeah. So, that's about it. What else was I going to tell? That's about it. I mean, COVID's been a pain in the ass, but at least, you know, everybody I know is vaccinated and boosted.
Hell yeah.
I had my kids for like 4 days because their mom got COVID from her boyfriend. And so they were here in this place, and we were just like, I mean, we had stuff to do, but they were just, it was like, man, it is exhausting having your kids full time all the time.
Yeah.
It becomes a thing.
I can't imagine.
It's like, how many times I have to wash these dishes and wash these clothes. So it's nice to have a teammate when she's not being stupid and getting COVID.
Yeah, that does definitely throw a wrench in the plans. Yeah,
because I mean, like, I got my vaccine in February, and she was like, why are you getting it so early? And I'm like, because I want to get it, because so many people in Texas aren't going to get it. So it's not like I'm taking someone else's place getting it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then she fought me on getting our kids vaccinated when it came out. And that was a big thing. And then she asked me again, you know, why are you getting your booster? And I'm like, because it's available. Why wouldn't I get it?
Yeah.
She's like, you don't need your booster. And I'm like, I'm going to get it because it's going to make me safer. And then lo and behold,
which one of y'all got COVID?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ka is a wheel.
Yeah.
And it came back.
Exactly.
So anyway, but at least she got better. She wasn't sick. I mean, obviously people are really getting sick. She does have her vaccine, so obviously her symptoms were not as bad. But it did turn into 5-day isolation. And then me and the kids had to get swabbed and tested, and we were all negative.
Which was They still doing free testing?
Yeah, at Walgreens. All you have to do is get on your phone and set up an appointment, and they'll do it for free.
Cool.
Yeah.
Because fun news for me.
You were exposed.
No.
Oh.
No, at the end of this month, I am going to a concert for the first time since I graduated high school. And they're being super safe about it. You have to bring either a vaccination proof, like your vaccination card, or like a negative COVID test from within a week of the date.
Who are you going to go see? Dave Matthews Band?
No. I'm seeing All Them Witches.
I hate Dave Matthews.
Good.
I think it's elevator music.
Yeah, not my jam.
It's right up there with like Bon Iver and Mumford & Sons, like things that I would rather have my fingernails pulled off.
Oh my God. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Break my leg again.
Oh, Jesus.
Break the other one.
Oh, God. Both at the same time. Just Magneto, pull that metal out.
Oh, please don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts so much lately because of the weather.
Yeah. Anyway. But anyway, I was... I'm probably going to have to get a COVID test beforehand because I have my vaccination card, but I did one of the two-part ones, and I lost the part one for it. So when I went in, they gave me the one for part two, but they just put it in the part one spot. So it's just marked as like the first one, not like the second dose of it. I don't know if they'll accept that. So I'm just going to have to get a COVID test beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Go get your booster, dummy.
But see, the thing I'm worried about with that is when I got the booster wasn't as bad, but when I got the vaccine and the booster, that shit put me out of commission for like a full 24 hours.
They say that getting your booster is going to give you the symptoms that you had from your second shot, but on a very lesser degree.
Okay.
Like what a fraction of it is.
That's not bad. Because so like, my second one wasn't as bad as the first shot.
Like my girlfriend just got her booster on Friday. Today is Monday. And she said, well, when I got my second dose, it put me out for like a day and a half of work. I was basically sick for 2 days straight. And she was sick overnight, but by the afternoon, she was feeling better. And she took some Tylenol. She had some fever. She had some chills, but...
Okay.
That's so It's not that bad.
Okay. I may just get the same
one. This beard of mine keeps me at a higher level of strength. And my charisma status so high that, you know, I'm not affected by things like vaccines or boosters as much. I was like, why is my arm hurt a little? Oh, that's right. I got a shot yesterday.
Damn.
Now I remember. Other than that, I was fine.
Man's bumping that AC up.
I don't know what to tell you guys.
High-ass armor class over here.
Roll that shit for initiative. Anyway, enough about that. Guys, we're happy that you're back. Hopefully we can do this video and audio. Lorinda, I'm wearing your cable knit sweater. I love you, babe.
He's got the cable knit sweater. I've got the dad plaid. And look at us fucking go.
And I've got the crazy topic. Are you ready? This one is a long one, so buckle in.
I'm fucking jazzed. I got my cookie that Jake was kind enough to give me.
You're welcome.
Oh, fucking right.
The more trash food you eat, the less trash food there is in this house.
Amen, brother.
And this cable and this sweater can continue to fit. Because I can't eat like that. I don't have that kind of metabolism. Yeah. Anyway. All right. Are you ready for this?
I was born ready.
Dylan, whenever you want to jump in, please jump in, because we are going to be talking about Theodore John Kaczynski.
Yeah. Ted Kaczynski, baby. Kaczynski. We're on that Unabomber shit.
That's right.
Oh, my God. I'm so fucking jazzed.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ted Kaczynski is 79 years old as of today. He was born on May 22nd, 1942. So on May 22nd of this year in 2022, he'll be 80 years old.
Holy shit.
That's how math works. Thank you very much.
Speaking of old people, now everybody's talking about it, but Betty White died.
I know. Like, rest in peace, baby.
2.5 weeks before her 100th birthday. R.I.P.
I know.
She was a real one.
She was. Rest in peace, Betty. And anyway, John Madden died also.
Who? Oh, yeah, John Madden.
Sports. There is a whole aspect of me that likes sports that we never talk about on the podcast because you don't. Because
I literally know nothing about. The only reason I know who John Madden is because of the Madden video game.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Which reminds me, Cade is trying to become a football dad. He wants to get into football, and we're all like, why? You've never expressed interest in it before. And he was like, I don't know, I kind of want to do it. And I was like, okay, well, I'll tell Jake. He might want to teach you some stuff. I bet Jake would be the one to turn to for that.
I'm going
to
message him. I'm going to tell him, my son, I'm ready. What did I say? I will show you the ways of the desert. Come with me, and I will show you the ways of the desert.
I figured you would be on board for that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I can help him with that if he wants to. I know all about football. I grew up playing football, dummy. I watch Dallas Cowboys every week. I do. I have jerseys and t-shirts and beanies, and I never wear that shit, and I never talk about this sort of stuff on the podcast because I know you don't know what I'm talking about.
It's just right exactly. Over my head.
Exactly. We got my son an Xbox for for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. Like, he needs his own fucking Xbox. And he wanted to buy Grand Theft Auto 5.
Nice.
Guess what his gamer tag is?
Oh no.
Are you ready for this?
Hit me with it.
Big Chungus 420.
Fuck off.
What the fuck, Jake?
Oh my God. Does he even know what marijuana is?
He absolutely does not.
He's like 3.
Oh my God, it's so ridiculous. My poor kid. That's his thing. Oh, you know what was funny? We're going way off.
That's fine. I got nothing else to contribute.
I was watching an interview with Keanu Reeves, the immortal Keanu Reeves, who we love. That was going to be my second of any historical figure.
Fair.
Makes sweet, sweet love to the immortal Keanu Reeves. Mm. He's probably a tender lover. Anyway, I'm not even gay, but whatever. It's irrelevant because it's never going to happen. He was like with a friend, and this friend had kids who had never seen The Matrix. And so he was trying to explain The Matrix. He was like, you know, this guy is living in a simulation.
Yeah.
And he realizes that he's living in a simulation and he wants to escape it, to live in the real world. And they're like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
It's such a generational difference there.
Yeah. But I mean, to be fair. If you look at the real world in The Matrix versus The Matrix, there is, like, I would rather live in 1999 than in a future where I have to live in dirt and filth and slop on a weird spaceship. I'm just going to be honest.
That's true.
It'd be cool to be able to, like, download Kung Fu into my brain right away.
But you're still living in a dystopian future.
Yeah.
Rather than in a simulation. Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get back to Ted Kaczynski. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, hit me with it.
There's a lot to go on here, okay? And everybody knows about Ted Kaczynski, so I'm starting from when he was a child and moving, and then we'll get to the point where he becomes the Unabomber, obviously.
Hell yeah.
Kaczynski has one younger brother named David, and when they were talking about him, there's, you know, interviews and documentaries and all this shit about him. Ted had been happy. At one point, I was watching a particular documentary just recently on Netflix, Kaczynski in his own words, and they talked to his brother David Kaczynski, and when he was like in middle school, maybe high school, he asked his mom, you know, why is Ted so withdrawn? And it turns out that Ted had severe hives when he was a baby, when he was only a couple of weeks old. And so he was in isolation in hospital while they were being treated. And at the time, the doctors and the nurses would only let his parents visit him for like 2 hours a week. And the rest of the time, he was just basically in the crib screaming his head off. Mm. Right. And so after that happened, after he came out, his parents said he was a normal, boisterous child before this. And when he came out, he was just like socially isolated. Wanda, his mother, recalled Ted recoiling from a picture of himself as an infant being held down by physicians while they were examining his eyes.
I wonder why.
Yeah, she said that he showed sympathy for animals who were in cages or otherwise helpless, but had real hard. I mean, from a very young age, had a really hard time interacting with people his age. From his first grade to his fourth grade, from ages 6 to 9, he was in elementary school in Chicago. They described him as being healthy and well-adjusted, the administrators. In 1952, his family moved to Evergreen Park, Illinois, and he transferred to a junior high school. And at this point, they tested his IQ, and he scored a 167, which is
genius level. Okay, cool. Man, I've never taken an IQ test. I don't know what to rank on there.
Okay, so 100 is average. And then
100
is average, 80, and it goes up by standard deviations is each 20. So if it's 100, then 120, then 140, then 160.
That's pretty fucking high.
That's on another fucking level.
I guess that makes sense.
He was able to skip to the sixth grade. And at this point, you know, even though he was obviously intellectually superior to the kids in his age, what happened was after he skipped ahead, he felt like he didn't fit in with the other kids. And he was bored at that point.
Yeah, that checks.
Mm-hmm. Neighbors described Kaczynski and his family as civic-minded folks. The parents did everything they could to support their kids and make sure that they had everything. Both Ted and David were very intelligent, but Ted was exceptionally so, obviously. Neighbors described him as smart but lonely. His mother recalled Ted was shy as a child who would become unresponsive if pressured into social situations. So at one point, she was so worried about his social development that she considered entering him into a study for autistic children. But when she met with the attending physician who was in charge of the thing, she decided not to because he was really abrupt and cold. He excelled mathematically in high school. He was also in the marching band and played trombone. He was a member of the mathematics, biology, coin, and German clubs. In 1966, a former classmate said he was never really seen as a person, as an individual personality. He was always regarded as a walking brain. During this time, he became intensely interested in mathematics and would spend hours studying and solving advanced mathematical problems. He became associated with a group of like-minded boys interested in science and mathematics known as the Briefcase Boys. Briefcase. Because they would all carry their stuff in briefcases instead of like backpacks or...
That's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah.
Also, him being regarded as a walking brain reminded me. For those that don't know, I convinced Jake to watch Psycho Goreman. Oh my god. Which is a delightful movie.
So stupid.
In which one of the children gets turned into a gigantic brain with eyeballs. And just is that way.
That was the dumbest movie.
It was so cool.
I watched like the first 20 minutes and then I would skip ahead. And
what?
Watch parts of it and skip ahead and watch parts of it.
You missed out on so much.
No,
then.
I didn't.
It feels like the Adult Swim animators.
Guys.
Or like
you already talked about this. Don't watch Psycho Gorman.
No, watch Psycho
Don't
Gorman.
Don't listen to him.
If you like Adult Swim and you like weird, violent, like...
No, I'll tell you what. Look.
Weird comedy
do
shit.
Do this for me. Don't listen to him right now. Don't watch Psycho Gorman. If you're going to watch one crazy-ass movie that Dylan is going to recommend, watch Pig with Nicolas Cage, because I will say that even though it's a wackadoo movie, he did a really good job.
That he did.
And it's well acted. And yeah, just watch Pig. Don't watch Psycho Gorman.
Watch Psycho Gorman. Or, also watch Mandy.
Or just watch Dune again. Like
I'll watch Dune again.
God, so many times I have watched Dune.
I gotta rewatch Dune.
I need to rewatch Candyman. I saw that you got it on our Vudu.
Oh,
so
hell yeah.
I need to
that
watch
was really
again.
Good.
Yeah, watch the first Candyman. And then skip all the sequels and then watch the next Candyman and just watch it. Because it's good.
It's fucking rad. I got to see it in the theaters with my friend Heather. That shit was awesome. It was so good. I was super happy with it.
All right. So Kaczynski was ahead of his classmates academically. He was placed in even more advanced mathematics class, and soon he mastered the material. Then he's, first of all, he's already skipped the sixth grade. Then he skips the 11th grade. And by attending summer school, graduates at the age of 15.
Damn.
That's when you're, most people are juniors in high school.
Yeah.
He was one of the school's five national merit finalists and was encouraged to apply to Harvard, which he got into. He was put into Harvard on a scholarship in 1958 at the age of 16. A classmate later said Kaczynski was emotionally unprepared. They packed him up and sent him to Harvard before he was ready. He didn't even have a driver's license at this time.
Damn, son. Poor kid.
So during his first year at Harvard, he was put into a dorm and basically was living there. And all of his roommates and classmates talked to him, or they described him as very, very intelligent, but very socially reserved. He earned his Bachelor of Arts in Mathematics in 1962 with a GPA of 3.12. That's impressive. In his second year at Harvard, here we go.
Oh, no.
Kaczynski participated in a study described by author Alston Chase as a purposely brutalizing psychological experiment led by Harvard psychologist Henry Murray. Subjects were told they were going to debate personal philosophy with fellow students and were asked to write essays detailing their personal beliefs and aspirations. Okay. These essays were given to an anonymous individual who would confront and belittle the subject in what Murray himself described as vehement, sweeping, and personally abusive attacks, using the content of the essays as ammunition.
What the fuck?
Yes.
Why?
I don't know.
What the fuck, Harvard?
Mm-hmm. They also hooked them up to electrodes to monitor their physiological reactions.
Had to go from bad to worse.
These encounters were also filmed, and subjects' expressions of anger and rage were later played back to them repeatedly. This is fucked up.
This is some Clockwork Orange shit. What the fuck, ma'am?
How long do you think he spent doing this?
I'm going to guess a year. A couple months.
The experiment lasted 3 years.
What the fuck?
With someone verbally and abusing and humiliating Kaczynski each week. Kaczynski spent 200 hours as part of the study. He could have just gotten married.
Nice.
It's horrible.
Nice.
Oh, Kaczynski's lawyers later attributed his hostility towards mind control techniques to this participation in this Murray study. Some sources have suggested that Murray's experiments were part of the project MK Ultra, which was the CIA's research into mind control. But it just sounds like somebody just wanted to brutalize him. I mean, there's a particular documentary where they reenact it, and he's just like, you know, they're using his words against him all the time. And other people were in this, and other people, you know, obviously dropped out, and people would come in and they would drop out. But Kaczynski just stuck with it.
Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. That cannot be good for anybody. But especially not a kid who's already, like, socially withdrawn and feels out of place. So I wonder why he eventually got the name the Unabomber.
I wonder. Kaczynski stated that he resented Murray and his coworkers primarily because of the invasion of his privacy he perceived as a result of their experiments. Nevertheless, he said, he was quite confident that my experiences with Professor Murray had no significant effect in the course of my life.
Well, I feel like that's not true. Oh, but,
really, Ted?
Come on, buddy, you're smart enough to know.
Just show us where he hurt you.
Show us on the doll.
Just show us where he hurt you. Okay, so in 62, after he'd graduated, he enrolls in the University of Michigan, where he earned his master's and doctoral degrees in mathematics in 64 and 67. Michigan was not his first choice for postgrad. He had applied to UC Berkeley and the University of Chicago.
Okay.
Both of which accepted him, but offered him no teaching position or financial aid. This plays heavily into the end of the story.
Oh, there it is. Yeah,
we love to say that.
There it is.
Okay, so UC Berkeley and the University of Chicago. But what he was looking for was a teaching position and a stipend, which he needed because he's in college since he was 15 years old, 16 years old. He has no fucking clue how to live.
Yeah.
Right?
No job, no car.
No
thoughts, so, head empty.
You know, what is it? University of Michigan gives him an annual grant of money and a teaching post. At Michigan, Kaczynski specialized in complex analysis, specifically geometric function theory. I have no idea what that is.
Not
and I have no desire to Google it.
No.
Professor, this one professor says that he was an unusual person. He was not like the other graduate students. He was much more focused about his work. He had a drive to discover mathematical truth. One of the other mathematics professors said it's not enough to say that he was smart. He was amazing. He said that he had unpleasant memories of Michigan, and he felt the university had low standards for grading, as evidenced by his relatively high grades. So he's a little bit self-deprecating, but it doesn't matter. For a period of several weeks in 66, Kaczynski experienced intense sexual fantasies about being a female and decided that he was going to undergo gender transition. And one of the things that I will say about him is that he left extensive journals mm-hmm. from the time that he was a kid all the way until they apprehended him.
Yeah.
They were all encrypted.
Oh shit. Yeah. I forgot about that.
He had a cipher. Cool. They were all ciphered. So they had to decipher them. Eventually.
Holy shit.
But he decided that he wanted to go to gender transition. He arranged to meet with a psychiatrist, but changed his mind in the waiting room and did not disclose his reason for making the appointment. Afterwards, enraged, he considered killing the psychiatrist, again, what he wrote in his journal, and other people whom he hated. He described this episode as a major turning point in his life. He quoted here, "I felt disgusted about what my uncontrolled sexual cravings had almost led me to do, and I felt humiliated, and I violently hated the psychiatrist. Just then, there came a major turning point in my life. Like a phoenix, I burst from the ashes of my despair to a glorious new hope."
That sounds bad.
That sounds terrible for the rest of the world. It really does. In the documentary that I was watching on Netflix, I'm always pointing like this because my TV guys is right there, and you know I'm sit here.
For me, it's right here.
I sit here and watch TV a lot when I'm doing this sort of stuff. So I was watching this documentary. His brother says that he doesn't really think that he was a gender he didn't really have gender dysphoria, but he had no way, he didn't know how to interact with the opposite sex in any other way, right? His dissertation, Boundary Functions, won a prize for Michigan's best mathematics dissertation of the year. His doctoral advisor called it the best I've ever directed. A member of the dissertation committee said, "I would guess that maybe 10 or 12 men in the country understood or appreciated it." In late 67, the 25-year-old Kaczynski became an acting assistant professor at UC Berkeley, where he taught mathematics. By September 68, Kaczynski was appointed an assistant professor and was on track for tenure. His teaching evaluation suggested that he was not well-liked by his students and that he seemed uncomfortable teaching and taught straight from the textbook and refused to answer questions. Again, doesn't know how to interact with human beings.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, can you imagine if your fucking teacher was Ted Kaczynski? If one day on the news Dr. they're just Kaczynski. Like, "Hey, by the way, Dr. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber," you have to be like, "Oh, that's cool. How is that going to impact my final grade?"
Mm-hmm. Without any explanation, Kaczynski resigned his post in 1969. So after that, he moves back home to Lombard, Illinois, where his parents are moving. He lives there. And 2 years later, in 71, he moved to a remote cabin he had built outside of Lincoln, Montana, where there he could live a simple life with little money and without electricity or running water, working odd jobs and receiving significant financial support from his family. I don't know if I'm going to get to this, but at one point he was working at to talk about how socially isolated he was and how difficult what he found to interact with humans. Ted was working at a factory where his brother David was a foreman, and he became attracted to a female coworker who was there, and they went on a couple of dates, and he kissed her at one point, and then they went on like maybe one or two dates more, and then she basically came to the point where she was like, "Look, Ted, you're a nice guy, but I just don't feel like there's a romantic connection there, and I don't really see a reason for us to be around you."
Hey, we've all been there.
He just freaked out.
Oh.
He thought about killing her. He was going to wait. He wrote in his journal that he was going to wait in their backseat and kill her.
Well, okay. Let me retract my "we've all been there." That is not a thing that you
write. Yeah, we've all been there in step one.
Yeah.
But it's a different kind of monster that goes to step two.
Yeah.
So
it is understandable to be disappointed.
Mm-hmm. That maybe hurts.
Even a little frustrated.
But let's just shake hands, we'll part friends, happened. And we'll just reactivate our Hinge profile and find someone else.
Exactly. You just fucking load up your Tinder, off you go.
Reinstall, and we're good.
There you go. That's all it takes.
There you go.
Ah, beans.
Everything that has a beginning has an end. That's from The Matrix.
Nice.
So instead, what Ted does is he gets to the factory early, and he writes all of these dirty limericks on notes and pastes them all over the factory about this girl.
Well, that's also very bad.
And his brother gets there and is like, Ted, you gotta take this shit down. And so he does.
Oh my God.
And then like confronts the girl again, and she rebuffs him again. And then he does it again, writes all of these dirty notes all over the factory. And so his brother brings him in and is like, Ted, you can't do this. I already told you you couldn't do this. And he was like, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to fire me? To his younger brother. And he was like,
yeah.
Yeah, I have to.
I have to fire you. Sexual harassment?
I mean, that's the only thing that I can do. And so he fired him from that job. So Ted ends up moving to Lincoln, Montana, out in the middle of butt fucking nowhere in a shack. No running water. No electricity.
I wonder where Lincoln, Montana is.
It's way the fuck up there. Not only that, again, the financial support. Dave, because David Kaczynski talks about how he would call up his parents and say, you know, I need money for a medical procedure. I need money for this or that. And they would just send him the money. His original goal was to become self-sufficient so he could live autonomously. He used an old bicycle to get into town and would volunteer at the local library. He visited to read classic works in their original languages. Other residents in Lincoln, Montana, said later that it wasn't unusual for people to be like that. There were a lot of other mountain men, kind of that sort of thing. Kaczynski's cabin was described by a census taker in the 1990 census as containing a bed, two chairs, storage trunks, a gas stove, and lots of books. But I mean, we're talking crazy mountain man style.
Good for him.
Mm-hmm. What was the other thing? The other thing that they talk about in this one that I was reading, because they have his journals and they talk about it, is that on his way into town, there was a farm there where they had a sawmill, and he would walk by that farm and they had the sawmill, and it was super loud, and obviously it's got a diesel motor, so it's just spewing out exhaust.
Yeah.
And the person who's living there was a little girl when Ted lived there. And she would talk about how you could just tell that there was something off about him. There were times when she felt like she was being watched. At one point, someone put sawdust into the fuel tank of the sawmill, and it was destroyed, and her dad had to spend, you know, thousands of dollars getting it fixed.
Oh, shit.
And stuff like that. And it wasn't later until they deciphered his journals that realized that Ted had this really, this hatred of that family and had thought about shooting them with his rifle from the woods.
Yeah, that's not great.
Yeah.
That's not great, Ted.
It was crazy. So all this starts to culminate in 1975. Kaczynski starts to perform acts of sabotage, including arson and booby trapping against developments.
Nice.
Near his cabin, like I said. He also dedicated himself to reading about sociology and political philosophy, including the works of Jacques Ellul. Kaczynski's brother later stated that this book called The Technological Society became Ted's Bible. Kaczynski recounted in 98, when I read the book for the first time, I was delighted because I thought, here's someone who's saying what I've always been thinking. Kaczynski was visited multiple times by his father in Montana before he died. He was impressed by Kaczynski's wilderness skills, but he later died. His dad died in 1990. They held a family meeting before his dad died, basically trying to figure out exactly what they were going to do about, you know, his lung cancer and that sort of stuff. But his dad ended up committing suicide instead of having to go through the process of dying from lung cancer.
Whoop.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Kaczynski obviously is known because what did he do? He mailed bombs through the U.S. Postal Service to all sorts of people. That happened between 78 and 95.
That's a long time to be mailing bombs to people and not get caught. the shit that I have heard about this dude is just buck wild. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to get into the meat of it.
For those of you keeping score at home, he cumulatively killed 3 people and injured 23 others. 16 bombs were attributed to him. While the bombing devices varied widely through the years, many contained the initials FC, which later said he later said stood for Freedom Club, right? He purposely left misleading clues in the devices and took extreme care in preparing them to avoid leaving fingerprints. Sometimes there were fingerprints or hairs that were in the devices that they found, but it was all planted evidence as red herrings.
The shit that he did like that blows my mind. And I was reading something, I guess it was a couple months ago, talking about like how he was so careful about like everything that he did, that he made his own glue.
He made his own glue from
from the hooves of deer. So he made his own shit so that people couldn't trace back like anything to him, almost. Fucking crazy shit this dude could do.
He would shave off the heads of matches to make his starting material and stuff like that. It started out very rudimentary, all made from wood, basically, and mailed through the thing.
Fucking wild.
And as it went on, he got better at it, and he got better at it. But let's start talking about the bombs.
Yes.
His first mail bomb was directed at Buckley Crist, who was a professor of materials engineering at Northwestern, which is in Chicago. I had to look it up. On May 25th, 1978, a package bearing Crist's return address was found in a parking lot at the University of Illinois in Chicago. The reason that it was left in the parking lot was because he had built it and it was too big to put into the mailbox.
Just
left it somewhere. The package was returned to Crist, who was suspicious because he had not sent it, so he contacted the campus police. This officer, Terry Marker, opened the package, which exploded and caused only minor injuries. Kaczynski had returned to Chicago for the May 78 bombing and stayed there for a time to work with his father and his brother at a foam rubber factory. Here it goes. In August of 78, his brother fired him for writing insulting limericks about a female supervisor. So that's where it happened. Kaczynski's second bomb was sent nearly 1 year after the first one, again to Northwestern. The bomb was concealed inside a cigar box, which is really small. I don't know. Do you know what a cigar box is? We used to have cigar boxes. We would use them as like pencil boxes when I was a kid. That's how old I am.
Yeah.
It was left on a table, and it caused minor injuries to a grad student when he opened it. So not as sophisticated. In 79, a bomb was placed in the cargo hold, here it goes, of American Airlines Flight 444, which is a Boeing 727, that had a flight from Chicago to D.C. A faulty timing mechanism prevented the bomb from exploding. It was altitude. It was going to be an altitude bomb.
Yeah.
But it released enough smoke that the pilots had to carry out an emergency landing. And authorities said it had enough power at this point that it would have obliterated the plane had it exploded.
Holy shit.
Then Kaczynski sent his next bomb to Percy Wood, who was the president of United Airlines. Kaczynski would often leave false clues in most bombs, which he intentionally made hard to find to make them appear more legitimate. Clues included metal plates stamped with the initials FC for Freedom Club somewhere, a note left in a bomb that did not detonate, replied, WU, it works, I told you it would, RV. And he used always the same kind of stamps, these Eugene O'Neill $1 stamps. He sent one bomb embedded in a copy of Sloan Wilson's novel, Ice Brothers. The FBI theorized that Kaczynski's crime involved a theme of nature, trees, and wood. He often included bits of tree, branch, and bark in his bombs. He selected targets including Percy Wood and Professor Leroy Wood. Crime writer Robert Graysmith noted his obsession with wood was a large factor in the bombings. You may remember the name Robert Graysmith, because he was in San Francisco during the time of the Zodiac murders.
He was part of the
press that publicized it and tried to get to the bottom of it. Graysmith is immortalized in David Fincher's movie Zodiac as played by Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal, my boy.
Yeah. All right. In 81, a package that had been discovered in a hallway at the University of Utah was brought to the campus police and was defused by their bomb squad. In May of the following year, a bomb was sent to Patrick C. Fisher, who was a professor teaching at Vanderbilt. Fisher was on vacation in Puerto Rico at the time, and his secretary, Janet Smith, opened the bomb and received injuries to her face and arms. Kaczynski's next two bombs targeted people at UC Berkeley, where he had taught. The first, in July of 82, caused serious injuries to engineering professor Diogenes Angelakos. Nearly 3 years later, in 85, John Hauser, who was a graduate student and a captain in the United States Air Force, lost four fingers and vision in one eye.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
It blew his fingers off. He was wearing his Air Force ring, like his Air Force Academy ring, and then like blew away and hit the wall so hard that it left an indentation.
Holy shit.
Like a signet.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Kaczynski had handcrafted, yeah, it's crazy. Kaczynski had handcrafted the bomb for wooden parts. A bomb sent next to the Boeing company in Auburn, Washington was defused by a bomb squad the next month. And in November of 85, Professor James McConnell and research assistant Nicholas Sauno were both severely injured after Sauno opened a mail bomb addressed to McConnell. In late 85, a nail and splinter loaded bomb placed in the parking lot of a store in Sacramento killed a 38-year-old computer store owner named Hugh Scrutton. This is where somebody saw him in the parking lot, and we have that photo of him with the hat and the bandana.
Oh, yeah.
And the hoodie. That's where this comes from, and the aviator sunglasses. On February 20th of 87, that's when it happened. This bomb was disguised as a piece of lumber. The next one. It injured Gary Wright when he attempted to remove it from the store's parking lot. The explosion severed nerves and wrist in Wright's left arm and propelled over 200 pieces of shrapnel into his body.
Oh my God.
Kaczynski was spotted while planting the Salt Lake City bomb. This led to widely distributed sketches, like I told you about. In 1993, between 87 and 93, that's where he takes this long 6-year break. And nobody knew. Right. So the FBI is searching for him. They're calling him the Unabomber at this point because it's university and airline bomber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he takes this 6-year break and they have no idea what the fuck's going on. They figure maybe he's in prison for something else or maybe he died because this guy doesn't seem like he's going to be the kind to stop.
Spoiler alert.
He doesn't stop.
He doesn't stop.
He just keeps coming. In 93, Kaczynski mailed a bomb to the home of Charles Epstein from UC San Francisco. Epstein lost several fingers upon opening the package. Oof. In the same weekend, Kaczynski mailed a bomb to David Gerlinter, who was a computer science professor at Yale. He lost sight in one eye, hearing in one ear, and a portion of his right hand. In 94, an executive named Thomas Mosier was killed after opening a mail bomb sent to him to his home in New Jersey. In a letter to the New York Times, Kaczynski wrote that he sent the bomb because of Mosier's work repairing the public image of Exxon after the Valdez oil spill in Alaska.
Yeah.
This was followed by the 1995 murder of Gilbert Brent Murray, who was president of the timber industry lobbying group called California Forestry Association. The mail bomb was addressed to the previous president, who had retired. And then geneticist Philip Sharp at MIT received a threatening letter shortly afterwards. In 95, Kaczynski mailed several letters to media outlets outlining his goals and demanding a major newspaper print his 35,000-word essay entitled Industrial Society and Its Future, which is what the FBI started calling the Unabomber Manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
He stated that he would desist from terrorism if this demand was met. There was controversy as to whether the essay should be published, but Janet Reno, who was the attorney general at the time under Clinton, and the FBI director, whose name was Louis Free, recommended its publication out of concern for public safety and in the hope that a reader could identify the author. The publisher of Penthouse volunteered to publish it.
Nice.
And Kaczynski wrote that even though Penthouse was less respectable than the New York Times and the Washington Post, he said to increase our chances of getting our stuff published in some respectable periodical, he would reserve the right to plant one and only one bomb intended to kill after it had been published if Penthouse published the document. So at this point, the Washington Post decides to publish it in entirety.
I like that he's like, okay, well, this isn't exactly what I aimed for, but you're kind of meeting me halfway, so let's compromise. The porn magazine can publish it, and then I'll only kill one other person.
I'll make you a $500 better deal.
Yeah.
Just like when I sold cars.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's just insane.
Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Also, good for Penthouse, though.
Yeah. good for Penthouse for trying to step up. Kaczynski used a typewriter to write this manuscript. He capitalized entire words for emphasis in lieu of italics. He always referred to himself as either we or FC, though there is no evidence that he worked with anybody else. David Wayne Foster analyzed the writing at the request of Kaczynski's defense team in 1996 and noted that it contained irregular spelling and hyphenation, along with other linguistic idiosyncrasies. This led him to conclude that Kaczynski was its author. Yeah, I'll talk about that later as to what how that all plays into it. Cool. Industrial society and its future begins with Kaczynski's assertion, the Industrial Revolution and its consequences have been a disaster for the human race. He writes that technology has had a destabilizing effect on society, has made life unfulfilling, has caused widespread psychological suffering. Living in a simulation.
Jesus. Real quick, how long did you say the
35,000 words?
That sounds like a lot of words.
35,000.
How many pages that is?
I don't know.
Like, roughly? Damn. So I was going to say, if it's not too long, maybe we could do like a Patreon thing where we just read the fucking manifesto.
I'm not going to read the Unabomber manifesto over the air because I feel like that's just too much.
Is it too much? Well, let us know in the comments.
Because then, I mean, how many pages is that? It doesn't matter. Isn't it like 100 pages?
Okay, if it's that much, it's then like 100 absolutely
page, it's
not.
Like 100 words to a page, right? So it's probably 350 pages long.
It can't be 100 words to a page. I don't know.
Figure it out. Google it while I'm talking.
Look it up. How much? 35,000 words?
I feel like the FBI would just... I mean, they're probably already looking at us for what the shit that we search all the time. We don't need them on our ass even more. They're going to be knocking on my door. Why did you read the Unabomber Manifesto over...
Bro, it's 7 pages. Well, 3,500 or 35,000?
7 pages?
No, if it's 35,000, that's 70 pages. Never mind. We're not going to do that.
What did I just say?
Would have been a cool idea.
I'm sure. Why don't you look up and see if somebody's ever read it online and see if anybody's got a YouTube video and see how long it took them?
It would basically be an audiobook at that point. 700 Unabomber.
Pages. Did you say 700? There's no way it's 700 pages.
No, 70.
If it takes us 30 minutes to read 6 pages. So 12 pages is an hour.
It's so the PDF of Industrial Society and Its Future is 34 pages, but that's very small font.
Doesn't why are we getting into this?
Yeah, no, we're not going to do that. Anyway, yeah, it you know, it could be there. Oh, the full audiobook of Ted Kaczynski's fucking manifesto is 3 hours and 15 minutes.
There you go.
Never mind. Sorry, Patreon.
What did I just tell you? Kaczynski argues that most people spend their time engaged in useless pursuits because of technological advances. He calls these surrogate activities wherein people strive towards artificial goals, including scientific work, consumption of entertainment, political activism, and following sports teams. None of what he said is wrong. We just talked about these things. It's all we fucking talked about before we started talking.
Yeah.
Is exactly what we talked. He predicts that further technological advances will lead to extensive human genetic engineering and that human beings will be adjusted to meet the needs of the social systems rather than vice versa. He's not wrong.
I hate to say that he's right about this one particular thing and this thing only.
He's right about this. Now, does it
not? Mean that you not right to send bombs to people.
No. Kaczynski states
that bad people.
Stop it. Kaczynski states that the technological progress can be stopped, in contrast to the viewpoint of people who says understand technological's negative effects, yet passively accept it as inevitable. He calls a return to primitive lifestyles. Kaczynski's critiques of civilization bear some similarities to anarcho-primitivism, and he rejected and criticized, but he rejected those kinds of views. He argues that the erosion of human freedom is a natural product of an industrial society because the system has to regulate human behavior closely in order to function, and that the reform of the system is impossible, as drastic changes to it would not be implemented because of their disruption of the system. He's not wrong.
Yeah, no, I definitely understand where he's coming from with that.
He states that the system has not yet fully achieved control over all human behavior, but is in the midst of a struggle to gain that control. Kaczynski predicted that the system will break down if it cannot achieve significant control, and that it is likely this issue will be decided within the next 40 to 100 years. He states that the task of those who oppose industrial society is to promote stress within and upon the society and to propagate anti-technology ideology, one that offers the counter-ideal of nature. Kaczynski goes on to say that a revolution will only be possible when industrial society is sufficiently unstable. Just a side note here. I was watching a TikTok. We're always talking about fucking TikTok.
It's because that's all we do.
They were talking about how, what is the point of going to school for 8 hours straight? And learning mind-numbing bullshit that doesn't even help us with real life. And it was all about how the school system was developed to bring an agrarian society and put them in a situation as a child where they would develop the mindset that they were just that the mindset where they could go to an 8-to-5 job and do mundane work and not complain about it.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that like they talk about there's another thing that was talking about how society has built this idea that it's not okay to take personal time, to not care about yourself, care about your mental well-being or your physical well-being.
Yeah, mental health is so criminally undervalued
And one of the biggest ways to show that is that we give out awards to children for perfect attendance.
Yeah, yeah, literally, yes. Mm-hmm. And it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's bullshit. I got a lot of words to say about a lot of the structures that are in American society. Mm-hmm. We're not getting into this in the Ted Kaczynski episode because I do not want to make it sound like I am agreeing with the Unabomber. Mm-hmm. However, he makes a couple compelling points.
Makes some compelling points. Anyway, so back to it. Because of the material used to make the mail bombs, U.S. postal inspectors who were initially investigating this had responsibility for the case and labeled the suspect the junkyard bomber. But FBI inspector Terry D. Turchi was appointed to run the Unabom investigation at one point. Unabom, UNABOM, University and Airline Bomber. In 79, an FBI led task force that included 125 agents from the FBI, ATF, and U.S. Postal Inspection was formed. The task force grew to more than 150 full time personnel. But minute analysis of recovered components of the bombs and the investigation into the lives of the victims proved of little use in identifying the subject, who built the bombs primarily from scrap materials available almost anywhere. Investigators later learned that the victims were chosen indiscriminately from library research, from that one bullshit, one-room fucking library in butt-fucking Lincoln, Montana. He was going to the reference section, those books that nobody looks at in the library anymore, even if they have them anymore.
Holy shit.
The last time you walked into a brick-and-mortar library for any reason.
So that Cade could renew his library card?
You can do that online. Oh my god, what's wrong with you people?
He likes to do it. Oh, actually, no, I think the last time I went to a library was to vote.
Okay. He was going to the reference section and looking up these people.
That is fucking crazy.
Who's the professor at this place? Who's the president at this place?
It was literally just like throw the dart at the fucking world map to see where you go.
This is why it was so difficult. This is why it was so difficult to pin him down. In 1980, Chief Agent John Douglas, working with agents in the FBI's Behavioral Sciences Unit, issued a psychological profile of the unidentified bomber. John Douglas is a huge pillar in the behavioral science world when it comes to law enforcement.
Yeah.
He was a pioneer of the subject, and he has been portrayed in he's written books, he's done speaking tours, and he was portrayed in the Thomas Harris novels and the books as office. What was his name? It was Scott Glenn played him. What was his? Oh shit, I can't remember.
The lead dude, mm-hmm. or the head guy at the FBI. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. They also basically based Holden Ford, the character in Mindhunter, played by Jonathan Groff, is basically based off of John Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy is larger than life when it comes fucking to behavioral wild, sciences man. And law enforcement. God, I can't remember his name right now. It doesn't matter. Here's what his profile said. It described the offender as a man. You know, when I go blank like that, you're supposed to look it up on IMDb because it's killing me that I don't remember.
See, this. Every time I grab my phone to do that, you're like, "Get off your phone!" Off I'm like, "I'm phone. Doing it for you."
Oh my god!
Except for the times that I'm playing Bejeweled, which I haven't been doing recently. Son I'll have bitch. You know.
I can't believe you, Jack Crawford.
There we go.
Scott Glenn, who played Jack Crawford in the Silence of the Lambs movie. Silence of the Lambs, actually went and met with John Douglas.
Oh, really?
And John Douglas was like, you want to hear something fucked up? He's like, I've got an audio tape of two serial killers killing someone, and you can listen to it if you want to.
Holy shit.
And he
let him
listen to about he said he listened to maybe 2 or 3 minutes of it and had to stop.
And do you think you could listen to the whole thing?
No, it gave him nightmares. I cannot listen to it.
Want to listen to the whole thing.
No, I'm sure you'd think you would.
I want to see if it's available on YouTube.
I don't need that evil in my life. It's horrible. Okay, so his profile described the offender as a man with above average intelligence and connections to academia. This profile was later refined to characterize the offender as a neo-Luddite. Neo-Luddite. A Luddite is someone who rejects technology. They also said that he probably held an academic degree in the hard sciences like math. But this psychologically based profile was discarded in 83, so 3 years later. FBI analysts developed an alternative theory that concentrated on his physical evidence and recovered bomb fragments. In this rival profile, the suspect was characterized as a blue-collar airplane mechanic because of the rudimentary way that they were done and the fact that he was striking out first at airline pilots. So they've got these two conflicting profiles, right? Mm-hmm. One that says he's big brain and the other one says he's blue-collar. The Unabomb Task Force set up a toll-free telephone hotline to take calls related to the investigation with a $1 million reward for anyone who could provide information leading to his capture. Before the publication of Industrial Society and Its Future, Kaczynski's brother David was encouraged by his wife to follow up suspicions that Ted was the Unabomber. David was dismissive at first, but he took the likelihood more seriously after reading the manifesto a week after it was published in September of 95. He searched through old family papers and found letters dating to the 70s that Ted had sent to newspapers to protest the abuses of technology using phrases similar to that in the manifesto. Before the manifesto's publication, the FBI held many press conferences asking the public to help identify the Unabomber. They were convinced that the bomber was from the Chicago area where he began his bombings, that he had worked in or had some connection to Salt Lake City, and by the 1990s, he had some association with the San Francisco Bay Area, because they're just saying, you know, these might have been places that he lived. The geographical information and the wording in excerpts from the manifesto that were released before the entire text that were published persuaded David's wife to urge him to read it.
Okay.
So all this time they have no idea until, you know, right before it gets published. After the manifesto was published, the FBI received thousands of leads in response to its offer of a reward for information leading to the identification of the bomber. So again, all of these leads.
That's the problem with like putting out a reward for leads, mm-hmm. is that you're going to get flooded with a bunch of bullshit. Mm-hmm. You should just put it out there and ask for help. And then the only people that want to help are the people that know something or actually like give a shit. Mm-hmm. But whatever.
No, it's crazy. Plus the other thing is that, I mean, they were doing it the old gumshoe way where they were like, it's got to be somebody who knows these guys.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be somebody, you know, they were just following the old protocol, but Kaczynski was on another level of genius. Oh, yeah. That it had nothing to do with it.
These guys were out here fucking playing checkers, and he was on that three-dimensional chess shit. He was on that
three-dimensional chess. He really was. Kaczynski's brother, David, hired a private investigator in Chicago to investigate Ted's activities discreetly. David later hired Washington, D.C. attorney Tony Biscali to organize the evidence acquired by Swanson and contact the FBI. Given the presumed difficulty of attracting the FBI's attention, Kaczynski's family wanted to protect him from the danger of an FBI raid, like what had happened at Ruby Ridge or with the Branch Davidians in Waco. They figured that there would be a violent outcome. They were afraid of what would happen. They figured,
understandably,
Kaczynski would not go quietly. So, in early 96, an investigator was working with this attorney, contacted former FBI hostage negotiator and criminal profiler Clinton R. Van Zandt. He asked him to compare the manifesto to typewritten copies of handwritten letters that David received from his brother. Van Zandt's initial analysis determined that the letter was better than 60% the same person. So, it was like, yeah, pretty sure.
Better than 60% ain't bad. Mm-hmm.
Van Zandt's second analytical team determined a higher likelihood. He recommended that they contact the FBI immediately.
Yeah.
So in 1996, the the criminal profiler gave a copy of a 1971 essay written by Ted Kaczynski to Molly Flynn at the FBI. She forwarded this essay to the San Francisco-based task force, and FBI profiler James R. Fitzgerald recognized similarities in the writings using linguistic analysis and determined that the author of the essays and the manifesto were almost certainly the same person. Combined with facts gleaned from the bombings in Kaczynski's life, the analysis provided the basis for an affidavit signed by the head of the entire investigation in support of the application for a search warrant. It's crazy. It really is. There's a dramatization of this on, I think it's Netflix, with, it doesn't matter. Listen, there's a dramatization that talks all about how they brought in all these linguistic analysis people. Basically, they took John Douglas's, I don't know how much of this is true, but it's so super fucking interesting that I don't care. They took all of this analysis and they were figuring out this guy's got to be a big brain thinker. So this guy who's basically the profiler brought in people from academia and they were like, I want you to look at this manifesto and see what you see. Is there anything in there that would determine what it is? And they started talking about it. Like, it's written in an old style where it looks like it's been written. You know, it's obvious that it's being written on a typewriter, but it was written by somebody who wrote academic papers before there was a way to do it on a word processor where you'd be able to go back to a page and revise something that you read. And so they would write like at every end of the chapter, they would write all of their corrections. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So they were able to say, okay, he probably got his PhD or did his postgrad work at a certain time. And then there were misspelled words that they thought were just because the guy wasn't educated. But it turns out that those misspelled words actually linked back to a Chicago-based newspaper that back in like the 60s was trying this new method where they were writing words phonetically to try to see if it would catch on.
Holy shit, dude.
This is big brain thinking.
What baby. The fuck?
So they finally found people who were going to play three-dimensional chess.
Oh my God.
Right?
Oh my God.
And so they were able to strengthen. They were like, okay, this is what's happening. And so it strengthened that original profile that said, okay, this guy is a post-grad. He's got a degree in mathematics or science or something like that. You know, he's from this area. He's probably this age.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the strength of that. And later on, when the manifesto was coming out and they finally matched it up, they realized, holy shit, we were so close.
Holy shit, dude. Mm-hmm. That is fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. So David Kaczynski had tried to remain anonymous. A part of it is it's really weird watching him on this documentary that I watched, because he's really calm and he's really very just like, I don't know, just really really mild mannered.
David's the younger brother.
Okay. The thing that happened was he says he's really just really, it's almost like he's disillusioned with the fact that his brother was a serial bomber and killed these people and a murderer.
I mean, I can kind of, like, how do you come to terms with something like how do you come mm-hmm. to terms with the fact that your brother, your older brother, is the Unabomber?
I guess so. But the way that he talks about it, he was like, I wanted to protect him. He's just really, I don't know, it's just strange. I have a hard time identifying with him. He's like, I wanted to protect him because before my mother died, my mother told me that I really needed to take care of my brother. And I'm like, brother's fucking killing people, bro.
Yeah, your brother sent bombs to a bunch of people after he made all the components by himself in his murder shack Montana.
In his murder shack.
So
he had tried to remain anonymous, but he was soon identified. Of course, the press starts sniffing around and they find something. Within a few days of all of this starting to leak, an FBI agent was dispatched to interview David and his wife with their attorney in Washington. At this and subsequent meetings, David provided letters written by his brother in their original envelopes, allowing the FBI to use the postmark dates to add more detail to their timeline of Ted's activities of where he was. David developed a respectful relationship with behavioral analysis team and met with them over 2 months before the search warrant was served on Kaczynski's cabin. And the whole thing was, it was like, you know, certain parts of it just like started to tick into places. Like, why would he go a certain amount of time and then like four bombs would be released? Well, it's because he's out in butt fucking Lincoln, Montana, and he's building these bombs in secret 1, 2, and 3. And then he's having to get on a bus and then go to a particular place and then mail them, and then those things get mailed out, and that's why they're basically like cluster bombs.
Yeah, so you have to take the time to gather all the ingredients, build them all out, and then go out and sell them. So I imagine it's a process that takes a little bit longer than, you know, writing a love letter.
Yes. David had once admired and emulated his brother.
Not anymore.
He had received assurances from the FBI that he would remain anonymous and that his brother would not learn who had turned him in. But his identity was leaked to CBS News in early April 1996. Anchorman Dan Rather called FBI Director Louis Free, who requested 24 hours before CBS broke the story on the evening news. The FBI scrambled to finish the search warrant and have it issued by a federal judge in Montana. Afterwards, the FBI conducted an internal leak investigation, but the source of the leak was never identified, because of course it wasn't. FBI officials were not unanimous in identifying Ted as the author of the manifesto. The search warrant noted that several experts believe the manifesto had been written by maybe another individual, but none of that ever panned out. They arrested him in his cabin on April 3rd of 1996. It was really weird. They had a couple of guys that were, you know, undercover agents, and they had a whole team there, but they had talked to the sheriff's deputy who was there, and they were like, okay, the best way to do this is just like have two people there. There's probably booby traps out there. Yeah. He's going to know his land. If you come in with a fucking SWAT team like you did at Ruby Ridge, it's going to be horrible. He's probably going to detonate a fucking bomb. Quick.
Yeah.
He's a bomber.
Yeah.
Right. So he's like maybe two or three guys. And so they had one guy dressed up like he was a logger, like from a logging company. And he was an FBI agent. And there was like the sheriff's deputy. And they walk up there and like, Ted, just want to let you know these guys are from the logging company. They wanted to do some surveys so that they didn't know where your property was. Do you mind if they walk around? You can come with them if you want to, just so that they don't disturb you. But we just want to let you know that they were going to be out here. And as he took a step out, they grabbed him and pulled him out.
Oh, shit. That was actually kind of slick.
Yeah.
Good for that. It was crazy.
A search of his cabin revealed a cache of bomb components. 40,000 handwritten journal pages that included bomb-making experiments, descriptions of the Unabomber's crimes, and one live bomb ready for mailing.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. They also found what appeared to be the original typed manuscript of Industrial Society and its Future. By this point, the Unabomber had been the target of the most expensive investigation in the history of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Oh, damn.
A 2000 report by the United States Commission on the Advancement of blah, 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 blah stated that the task force had spent over $50
million.
$50 million. $50 million.
What the fuck? That's so many dollars.
To find one evil genius in butt-fucking Lincoln, Montana.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, really, this is the perfect example of an evil genius.
I mean, yeah, fucking obvious. Like, the lengths he went to avoid being caught, and the success he had for that long, and the amount of money he made the federal government spend just to try and catch him, when he's just fucking big dick chilling in some fucking cabin out in the middle of fucking nowhere. And he wrote that in
his notes about how inept they were.
Yeah.
They're like, they're so far off. After his capture, this is the craziest part about it, theories emerged naming Kaczynski as the Zodiac Killer.
Oh!
It's not him, it's Ted Cruz. Who murdered five people in Northern California from 68 to 69. Among the links that raised suspicion was that Kaczynski lived in San Francisco from 67 to 69, that both individuals were highly intelligent with an interest in bombs and codes, and that both wrote letters to newspapers demanding the publication of their works with the threat of continued violence if the demand was not met. But Kaczynski's whereabouts could not be verified for all of the killings, and since the gun and knife murders committed by the Zodiac Killer differed from Kaczynski's bombers, authorities did not pursue him as a suspect. It never panned out.
I still think that would have been the biggest fucking plot twist if the Zodiac Killer was also the fucking Unabomber. Can you imagine?
That's a little too crazy even for this simulation. Robert Graysmith, remember him?
Yeah.
Jake Gyllenhaal, author of the 1986 book Zodiac.
Nice.
Turned into a movie by David Fincher. If you haven't watched it, fucking go and watch that movie.
Watch the fucking movie Zodiac. It's a great fucking movie.
Get your
movie.
Shit together. Give your balls a tug and watch Zodiac by David Fincher.
Give your balls a tug, tit fucker.
That's right. He says the similarities are fascinating but purely coincidental. The early hunt for the Unabomber portrayed a perpetrator far different from the eventual suspect. Kaczynski consistently used we and our throughout the industrial society and its future. At one point in 1993, investigators sought an individual whose first name was Nathan because the name was imprinted on the envelope of a letter sent to the media. When authorities presented the case to the public, they denied that there was anyone other than Kaczynski involved in the crimes. There was nobody else. It was just him.
He just went to such great lengths to throw people off the scent.
Evil genius.
Evil genius.
A federal grand jury indicted Kaczynski in June of 96 on 10 counts of illegally transporting, mailing, and using bombs. Kaczynski's lawyers were Montana federal public offenders, attempted to enter an insanity defense to avoid the death penalty. But Kaczynski rejected this strategy. On January 8th of 98, he asked to dismiss his lawyers and hire Tony Serra as his counsel. Serra had agreed not to use an insanity defense and instead promised to base a defense on Kaczynski's anti-technology views. After this request was unsuccessful, Kaczynski tried to kill himself on January 9th.
As one does. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, we're coming up on the anniversary of Ted Kaczynski trying to kill himself.
Oh, my God. That's my nephew's birthday. The psychiatrist who examined Kaczynski concluded that he suffered from paranoid schizophrenia. Another forensic psychiatrist said that he was not psychotic, but had schizoid or schizoid personality disorder. In his 2010 book, Technological Slavery, Kaczynski said that two prison psychologists who visited him frequently for 4 years told him they saw no indication that he suffered from paranoid schizophrenia, and the diagnosis was ridiculous and a political diagnosis. Whatever, doesn't matter. You're crazy, man. You're crazy. You're criminally insane. On January 21st of 98, Kaczynski was declared competent to stand trial by a federal prison psychiatrist. As he was fit to stand trial, prosecutors sought the death penalty, but Kaczynski avoided this by pleading guilty to all charges on January 22nd, 1998.
Damn.
And accepted life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. He later tried to withdraw this plea, arguing that it was involuntary as he had been coerced to plead guilty by the judge. But they denied this request, and an appeals court upheld it. In 2006... an appeals judge ordered that the items from Kaczynski's cabin be sold at a reasonably advertised internet auction. Items considered to be bomb-making materials such as diagrams and recipes were excluded. The net proceeds went towards the $15 million in restitution that that had been awarded to his victims. Kaczynski's correspondence and other personal papers were also auctioned. The judge ordered the removal before sale of references in these documents of Kaczynski's victims. Kaczynski unsuccessfully challenged those redactions as a violation of his freedom of speech. It ended up, they ran the auction for 2 weeks in 2011 and raised over $232,000.
Can you imagine how much some of that shit is worth today?
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it. I'm sure Zach Bagans probably has some of this shit.
Ugh, fucking asshole. Fuck that guy.
McMurray's a piece of shit, but Zach Bagans is also a piece of shit. Guys, if you haven't already figured out, you need to stop what you're doing and watch Letterkenny.
We are dropping... This is like the third Letterkenny reference this episode.
Just this episode.
Jesus.
Because Theodore Kaczynski is currently serving 8 life sentences without the possibility of parole at ADX Florence, a supermax prison in Florence, Colorado.
Damn, son.
Mm-hmm. Early in his imprisonment, Kaczynski made some friends.
Oh.
Rami Youssef and Timothy McVeigh, who were the perpetrators of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing and the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing.
Fuck me.
The trio discussed religion and politics and formed a friendship which lasted until McVeigh's execution in 2001. In 2012, Kaczynski responded to the Harvard Alumni Association directory inquiry for the 50th reunion of his class in 1962. Are you ready for this?
He listed his occupation
as prisoner, and he listed his eight life sentences as awards. And they posted that shit. Come on, Harvard.
Fucking
why would
kidding
you send
me?
It to him?
Are you for one thing, why would you send it to him? For another thing, why would you publish that as his occupation and awards as 8 life sentences? Are you fucking nuts?
Because this is what you want. And like, hey, guess what, Harvard, the educational seat, the intellectual tower of power, and Ted Kaczynski is there.
Jesus Christ. To be fair,
To be fair.
He was very smart. So, I mean, I can see why the intelligence would be a good thing for Harvard. Also,
cranking out evil geniuses.
It is Harvard. Objectively hilarious, and whatever intern did that deserves a full-time position.
I mean, if someone was in that office going, we're going to send out this thing. Holy shit, Ted Kaczynski?
Yeah, somebody, because this was obviously after he was arrested, like he's been in prison for a while.
It's 2012.
They had to go through like the thought process of, okay, we got this person.
Do we
person.
Send it to him?
Ted Kaczynski, that name sounds familiar. Google. Mm-hmm. Oh, Unabomber. Yeah, let's go ahead and greenlight that one. Just send that one out there.
His cabin was put on display at the museum in D.C. until late 2019 before it was transferred to a nearby FBI museum.
I want to see the cabin.
Mm-hmm.
I wish...
Look it up.
I wish it would have just been... I wish it was still up, like, in its original place. But we're looking up Unabomber Cabin.
It looks really creepy.
Oh, yeah, that is... That's a Montana murder shack.
Oh, it is. Montana murder shack.
There's the title.
Oh, Hannah boy. Montana murder shack.
Hannah Montana murder shack. Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, that's the best. This is how we come up with the titles for these.
You guys are seeing it here live. This is, you can watch the gears a turning.
Yeah. You hear that rusty sound? That's not just my leg. It's nice. Also the brain. Anyway, good okay. God. That's all about Ted Kaczynski. I told you it was going to be a wild ride.
Fuck yeah, man. I've been so excited to hear more about the Unabomber. I'm so glad that we finally did it.
Bringing the heat.
Bringing that heat.
Thunder. Bringing the hail, Satan.
Hail, Satan.
That's right. WKRX, Greater Cincinnati. All the metal hits. Hail, Satan.
Oh. All right. Have not heard enough of that recently.
I know. It's because you're so fucking busy.
I'm so busy.
And then we couldn't record last week because I had my kids because of COVID.
Yeah. I'm not about to get up in that nonsense.
No, I mean, we were good. I mean, we were fine. We're vaxxed and boosted and fine. It's just everybody
at
else.
At least one of y'all is.
At least one of us is. All right. Well, that's all I got, baby.
Ah, fucking great, man. Love this. I love this shit. Hopefully, eventually, I'll be able to come up with a topic, at least like a small one.
Don't worry, this works just fine.
But I mean, yeah, this is still fun. At least we're getting some shit out there. We're glad that everybody has sat with us through this and is enjoying, hopefully, our video content. We're trying something new. Oh, look at him. Oh, give him the smolder. Thank you.
Ooh. Thank you for joining us. I should get a pipe. Not smoke it, just have the pipe.
Just have the pipe?
No, that's way too. Whatever.
Okay, next time we do a video episode, I'll bring a cable knit sweater. You wear your cable knit sweater. We each get a pipe.
Find one of those leather wingback chairs.
Oh, fuck, that's cool. I know. Or a silk robe.
Oh, my God. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Too Scared to Sleep.
Welcome to another episode.
Salutations. Stop. We need to stop. It's so stupid.
I do have some silk pants. They are leopard print.
Dylan, if you walk in here with silk pants, I will make you leave.
No, nobody's going to see it except you.
And that's one too many people to see you in silk pants.
I'll have you know, they are wonderful. Leopard print silk pants, they're banging.
Can't believe people are still watching you talk about leopard print silk pants. No, please don't wear that. This is enough
loss.
I love this cable knit, though. This thing is awesome.
It is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I got my plaid. I'm in the spirit. Oh, I totally forgot. I have my little Ouija pin on my dad's
nice. Head. His planchette.
A little planchette. Oh, there's a glare. Where is it? There we go. You can't see. It's backwards. Whatever. Anyway, feeling spooky, as always.
Dummy. It's English. What do you mean it's English? It's English backwards. That's from The Exorcist. The gold standard of horror movies.
Good shit.
Yeah. All right, guys. That's all we got. We will post this as soon as we can. Thank you so much for hanging with us. We're going to find a way to post this as audio as well, which we need to. Dylan?
Yeah.
We'll do it.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. You got anything else?
Thanks, everybody, for spending an hour and 23 minutes with us.
That's a normal episode runtime.
We appreciate it. And we hope you've enjoyed looking at our beautiful faces, our beautiful attire.
My God, you're just talking to talk now. Look, guys, thanks a lot. From Dylan, my co-host, my name is Jake, and we hope we've left you too scared to sleep.